You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 23 July. We've got local inflation data for June, due 10 a.m. this morning. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Chantal Marks, FNB Wealth and Investments. The Sasol full year update, market did not like. And then a quick look back at the Sibanye-Stillwater, that acquisition, U.S. metals recycler, Metalix. We've got Karoo CEO Zach Calisto on results. When we chatted for the full year, they were getting good momentum. That does seem to have continued into the new financial year. And then Mark Pendlebury, his whiskey brother. I want to get a state understanding of the business of whiskey. And there are some whiskey shows coming up. Those things are dangerous. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Auditor General's war on waste and corruption yields 4.5 billion rand, but it's a war that is far from won. Business Day, High Prop flags investor fatigue with Mass PLC as bid heats up. Retail-focused real estate investment trust CEO believes his company has the right team for complex matters. Morning markets, the US was mixed, the S&P up 0.1%, the Nasdaq off 0.5%. The East is green. Sydney 0.3% higher. Tokyo after elections up 3.2%. Hong Kong up 0.9% and Tencent 2.6% higher. Commodities mostly green. We've got gold futures 3,442. Brent 68.80. Platinum is the only red on the screen at 1,490 and palladium 1,319. The rand is 17.54. Bitcoin $119,000, and top 40 opening 590 points to the green, 0.6% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money, also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chantal Marks, Head of Research at FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantal, appreciate the nice early morning time. Sasol, what struck me, I read the sense, first line, in a challenging macro environment, and I'm like, oi, this is going to be tough. It was, there's a lot of moving parts there, some of it their own, some not, but the market didn't like, and it certainly was a tough update for the full year.
Yes, so I think there were three things. The first thing is the tough macroeconomic environment story and the pricing issues that really is outside of management's control. And I wouldn't have thought that the market would have not liked the update because of that. It's just the reality. Yeah. The second thing was that the operational performance really still isn't great. There's constant issues with coal quality in the mining operations that then filters through into the fuels business. And it just seems as if the issues that they're facing don't stop. There's always some kind of a maintenance shut or an unrest or a weather-related or electricity out. Like, it just seems as if they aren't really performing on that basis. And I think that the market didn't like that. And then the final thing is they added a little trading statement as well, right? And they said that earnings per share is going to increase by more than 20%. Now, that's reported earnings. Duh, they kitchen sinked the last result. So it was always going to be a lot better. But they gave absolutely zero guidance in terms of what the adjusted figure will look like, the headline earnings number will look like. Maybe it's a little bit early. Maybe we're being a little bit too fickle about it. But I think that explains it.
That was my sense as well, because I'm reading, and it comes to the trading, to the actual trading update, the meat of it, and it's just missing. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I mean, I don't know, the plus 20%, I take your point. It was always going to be plus 20. We needed a little more color to that. Let's have a look at Sibanye-Stillwater. A deal, this is back from Monday. A little deal. Oh, okay, hang on. 1.5 billion rand. I mean, little is relevant. But I don't know. I like the look of it.
I do as well. I like the fact that Sibanye is doing things a little bit differently. Mm. So, I mean, they went, they started as a gold miner, went into PGMs. Everyone thought they were crazy, did very, very well with Anglo's old mines, purchased Stillwater in the US, which is also mainly a palladium miner, but they also have a little recycling business. That didn't go that well. And then the platinum price turned against them. But during the platinum price or the PGM price downturn, they've been picking up these kind of future-focused battery metals type operations and moving a little bit away from mining per se. And this kind of fits in with that. It complements the US PGM recycling business that they already have, that they inherited from the Stillwater acquisition. Mm-hmm. And it just, yeah, it diversifies it nicely. I like it.
And it also brings them some skills. And it, you know, I mean, some of it's small. I mean, you know, the gold recycling is about 5% of current output, not material. Copper's new, they don't really have much there. Silver, it increases silver by 50%. And of course, Neil Frohnman is exiting soon. This, as someone who was a Mr. Dealmaker, this is, I suppose, his last hurrah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not massive, as you mentioned, in the context of how large Sibanye is. But I think it just gives us an indication of the direction that the company is heading in and where they'll probably continue even after Frohnman's departure.
The tricky question, of course, they some gold. Gold's been doing great. They're predominantly PGMs these days. PGMs are on an absolute flyer that has been holding. Is there still value here? Or, I mean, how do you look at it? I disclaimer, I hold some and I look at it and I like it and I don't know what to do. The honest answer.
So, I mean, these are stocks that are extremely geared to the PGM price, and Sibanye probably more so because they're carrying a little bit more debt than some of the other players. So I think if the platinum tear or the PGM tear continues, Sibanye will do exceptionally well and there will be more upside in the share. The caveat, I guess, is that it is very geared to the PGM price. So if it goes down, then this thing will go down more than the other PGM miners. So yeah, I mean, I see a space for it in a portfolio. It's not my best pick in the PGM space because of that high debt level. But yeah, I certainly think it does feel as if this PGM rally that we're experiencing right now has some legs, and Sibanye will be one of the key beneficiaries.
Yeah, I will continue to hold. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Always appreciate the early morning time. A poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Back to the Sasol, a volatile stock. Question is, are you holding or have you perhaps, maybe you've taken your money and run, maybe you're just watching from an outside. I certainly am the outsider watching. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Zach Callisto. He, of course, CEO at Karooooo. First quarter ending May, 19% increase in Cartrack subscriptions, 17% in subscribers, 2.4 million. Adjusted earnings per share up 19% at R8.55. Zach, appreciate the early morning. We chatted at your full year and noted there that there had been sort of continued momentum through the four quarters, and this has continued into the new financial year. I suppose business, I mean, you're reporting quarterly, but that the momentum is sort of kind of ingrained at this point, and as I say, continuing through into the new year.
Very good morning to you. Our first quarter is, as we have given outlook for the year, and it's very much in keeping with that. So our ARR is strong, and we believe we should have momentum for the next three quarters to beat or to meet our expectations.
Southeast Asia, you've been chatting a while to say this is a big growth area and is delivering good numbers, but Southeast Asia saw 30% growth, doing even better, which again has been a stated part of your strategy.
Yes, yeah, so we're getting good momentum in Asia and in Europe at this point in time. So Asia is our fastest growing, Europe is our second fastest growing, and South Africa is our third fastest growing region. But we see momentum in all of those geographies.
Your commercial customer base, do you get much opportunity for sort of upselling? And I ask this because you, one of the lines in the results was capitalizing on growing demand for video solutions. In other words, a customer comes in, but over time they sort of take more and more product. Is that a typical sort of life cycle you would see from a customer?
So typically, unlike the American peers that we compete with, what typically we do is we continuously R&D, we continuously adding stack to our platform and adding more value to our customers. And we typically give all that value at the same price to the customers. And so over the years, you'll see what we've been charging customers today is very much what we were charging customers in 2004. So there's been no real price increases in South Africa, for instance. But if you take it in pure terms, you're probably, you know, if you take inflation into account, you're probably paying less than half of what you were paying 20 years ago. However, we can still remain very profitable because of our economies of scale. We now are launching new products, specifically last year. The AI video is not something new to us. It's something that we've had, but we've been able to get the product to much cheaper prices today than we did when we initially launched in 2018. And now we can make it a broader market offering. In doing so, that equipment and the data costs are considerably higher than our telemetry offering. So we now are starting to give that value to the customer. But because of our increased costs that are so substantial, we have to have increased costs to our customers for the customers that opt for these additional services.
Gotcha. And you mentioned the economics of scale. And my next question was going to be around that operational leverage. And we can, in a sense, see it. Your general administration expense is 10% higher. That in the back of 19% revenue. There is, we often see this in younger companies. Cartrack's got a much longer history. But you still get that economics of scale and ultimately that operational leverage.
Yes. However, you know, in our business, because there's so much growth potential, our general and administrative expenses will probably increase throughout this year in the next 2 to 3 years as we expand in the countries we're in. If you look at countries like Indonesia or the Philippines or Thailand, you know, we've got one central office. Yep. You know, we need to still build out probably in Philippines about 20 central offices, in Indonesia about another 20. You know, in South Africa, I think we've got 15. Mm-hmm. So it just gives, you know, we're in the very early stages of our developing our footprint in Asia, but we're making good traction.
Yeah, and we can see that, and we've spoken before about the sales and marketing, that up 29%. And again, that then gives you the pipeline going through. Bringing it to sort of perhaps more direct, and I'm thinking in South Africa, and I'm thinking the sort of the car track that's in an average person's car out there in the traffic this morning. Are you seeing people, because I'm imagining I put my car track into the car and it pretty much stays there for the duration of my ownership of that vehicle. Are you seeing people holding on to their cars for longer?
Yeah, so what we've seen over the last 5 years is that our customers are definitely holding the cars on for longer. And, you know, that can be as a result of many factors. One of them just economic crunch. And the other one, as we build our base, we obviously going into lower LSM groups. And those lower LSM groups, also the affordability is, you know, is lower, so they keep their vehicles, you know, for typically much longer. But obviously, there's many other factors to play to get that longer life. On the commercial vehicles, what we find is that typically customers hold their vehicles for about their lifespan increases between 20 and 30%. And that's not because of affordability, that's just because of productivity, efficiency, and monitoring the use of that vehicle, which allows, you know, the drivers to be more careful and to have more regular maintenance. So they're able to keep their vehicles for an additional 20 to 30%. If you, and that's more on the commercial side, which is less to do with affordability, but more just to look after their assets.
Yeah, and of course, Karoo is helping them look after those assets and make them last longer. We'll leave it there. Karoo CEO Zach Callister, always appreciate the early morning insights. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
At the end of November, Johannesburg will host the first G20 summit on African soil, and the world is watching. Mandates and Megaphones is a new MoneyWeb podcast hosted by me, Jeremy Maggs, unpacking the politics, promises, and the power plays behind this historic event. From debt diplomacy and climate justice to global trade tensions, infrastructure pressure, and who gets a seat at the table, I'm going to dig into the issues that really matter and the impact on business and the economy. Follow Mandates and Megaphones on MoneyWeb and wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by Standard Bank.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting now with Mark Pendlebury. He's founder and managing director at Whiskey Brother. Mark, appreciate the early morning time. Whiskey as a business, and a lot of my listeners are out there. Come on, whiskey's not a business. It's the best drink there is out there. But there's a business angle to it. And how is it these days? I mean, are we seeing growth? Are we seeing sort of increase in demand and perhaps interest in whiskey?
Good morning, Simon. Thank you very much for having me. So the answer is sadly not. I think like many industries, whiskey has been impacted by, let's say, the post-COVID highs, or at least coming off those post-COVID highs, returning to, you know, 2019 levels. In some instances, some markets are even seeing a decline there. I think like many industries, you know, with current, tariff headwinds, economic uncertainty, economic crunch, which your previous guest also mentioned, we're seeing people, not have as much disposable income for whiskey, not only in South Africa, but globally.
There is also the trend, and maybe we're seeing it here, and we see it in beer, where the consumption goes down. And I think around whiskey, you know, gin's a competitor these days, whereas 20 years ago, really, it was just my granny who drank gin.
Yes. Gin has fallen from its peaks, sure, even pre-COVID. So, you know, when it comes to, let's just say, more premium spirits, and nothing wrong with gin, but, you know, I'm not gin brother.
Nope.
But we've definitely seen a decrease in gin. If you just look at the number of even local producers and local brands that existed during the heights of the gin, you know, trend. I mean, there's still more gin drinkers than there were, but it's definitely come off quite dramatically again, both in South Africa and globally.
Do we see new brands entering whiskey? And I ask because, you know, when I open my bottle of whiskey, that there's always a lot made around the fact that, you know, first distilled in, I don't know, some date that is literally hundreds of years ago. Yet I do see new regions coming in. I mean, I've been at some of your tasting sessions, and suddenly there's Thai whiskey, there's Welsh whiskey. Are new brands coming through?
They are definitely. I think, you know, we're at a very interesting time in the industry where you've never had such a scale or such a variance in scale from different producers. You know, you have the biggest producers we've ever had, and nothing wrong with being big. We're not associating that with bad. But then by the same token, you've got almost, you know, craft distillers, micro distillers that, you know, produce a tiny fraction of what a big producer would produce in a year. So, you know, what's interesting, we still see, you know, there's been such a massive investment over the last several years in the whiskey industry, both in Scotland and in the other primary countries, Ireland, Japan, America. But at the moment, everyone is very uncertain. The big producers at the moment are taking their foot off the gas. A lot of them have sent staff home or are dropping a shift from production. But at the same time, you've got small producers who still are selling everything that they can make, that have only been around for a handful of years and are giving the other guys a run for their money. But the volumes are incomparable in terms of the small producers producing in a year what a big producer would produce in half a day.
Talk to me about the Only Whiskey Show. And at the top of the show, I said that these sort of whiskey shows are dangerous because I've never met a whiskey I didn't like. My bank manager phones me the next day thinking my credit card's been hijacked. You're in Joburg, you're in Cape Town. What's the genesis of the show?
Yeah, so we started the show, I think it was approximately 8 years ago, I think nine maybe. We just felt that there was room in South Africa for another whiskey show, because you know we're not the only ones, but we have been inspired by international whiskey shows, and our intention, very much like what we do as a business, is to try and be slightly more exclusive, still be inclusive, but have more premium brands, ticket prices slightly more, but it's a more intimate experience. So we only have 500 people per night. When we sell out, we sell out, and we always have people coming running last minute saying, please, can I get tickets? And we say, unfortunately not. It's very much part of the approach of the show. And then there was a hiatus during COVID, sadly, like everything. And then when we came back in 2022, we expanded the show to Cape Town as well. So it runs two nights in Cape Town, two nights in Johannesburg. It's always in August. It's run by Whiskey Brothers, so we arrange the whole thing. We have international whiskey guests come through. It's a lovely opportunity to explore new whiskeys, mingle and meet like-minded whiskey enthusiasts. And I guarantee you, if you do attend, Simon, not only will you find a whiskey you don't like, but you'll find something you like even more than what you liked before.
Look, I mean, my bugbear with whiskey is Irish, and I know some people are hating me for that, but I'm a traditionalist in that. And it really is. It's an opportunity for attendees to truthfully try things, and for someone like me to get over my bugbear around Irish whiskey. There will be sort of different things, and it really is a place to, I suppose, experiment as a whiskey drinker.
Absolutely. I think if we do speak about the economic crunch and people maybe being a little bit more discerning with their spend, you don't want to take the risk of buying something you've never tried or haven't heard of, because maybe you don't enjoy it. And if you're spending several hundred rand a bottle or even north of that, that can be quite painful. So I think the whiskey show is a great opportunity to try over 150 different whiskeys, which is included in the ticket price. We don't recommend you try them all. And not only maybe find something that you already like from a particular category, but explore something that maybe hasn't sat well with you historically. We have whiskies from across the world, as you mentioned, where you of course have Irish whiskey, we have South African whiskey, we've got Scotch whiskey, but we've got Japanese whiskey, we have Taiwanese, we have Israeli whiskey, we've got Indian whiskey, and that's to your earlier comment that there are new producers that have popped up everywhere over the last decade across the world, and we've got international guests, including an Irish whiskey brand ambassador. We have Alan Winchester, who has spent 50 years in the industry and has seen this before in terms of the ups and downs. He has managed over 22 Scotch malt distilleries. His name is engraved in the 50-year-old whiskey. It's named after him. He produced that. So it's a wonderful opportunity just to see what's out there, see what's new, see what's limited, try something you haven't tried before. There is so much whiskey out there. We are absolutely spoiled for choice. Yeah. At the moment, and have been for the last few years, and no one whiskey drinker can expect to try it all or own it all, nor do they need to. But the show is a great opportunity to expand your horizons, and we recommend you come along with friends, and it's likely your friends will have preferences that you don't have or that you don't share, and it's a good opportunity to explore those together.
Yeah, and a top tip for folks: don't try all the whiskeys, because then not only do you have a broken credit card, you have a broken head at the same time. But it does sound fascinating. I like your idea to try things and to try something that maybe you're not sure about and maybe find new things. We leave it there. That's Mark Pendlebury, founder, managing director, Whiskey Brother. The show is The Only Whiskey Show. That's it for today. I was chatting with Sean Kelly yesterday, Parity Wealth Managers. We were talking about fund managers reducing equity exposure in favor of more bonds. And we asked you if you were reducing equity exposure in your portfolio. Just over 40% said no, equity for the win. A third said leaving as you are. A quarter said yes, you are reducing risks. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Quality over growth and value.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.